This is the Beat Your Genes podcast, and my name is Nate G. I created this podcast to bridge together the science of evolutionary psychology and the clinical experience of Dr. Doug Lyle, all so that we can discover what life is all about. In each episode, Dr. Lyle analyzes and explains the psychology behind real-life situations from our listeners on topics like romance, friendship, work, family, health, and many more. We broadcast live every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, which means you can call us during the show and ask Dr. Lyle a question. The U.S. number is 657-383-0751. Or send in your question through the website, www.beatyourgenes.org.
So this week, we are going to be talking about relationship conflict. Now, last week, we talked about relationship conflict, but we went over an article from WebMD that had a lot of different confusing opinions from the authors in various different books, and Dr. Lyle did a great job setting us straight into what actually is the issue. Thank you again for Dr. Lyle. Did you have a good time talking about that?
Yeah, that was fun. Fun and aggravating at the same time.
Well, this week, and we actually ended the show last week with a very interesting example from a couple that were having a conflict. And this week we are going to continue. We have five different situations of actual relationship conflicts, so real life examples from listeners or just other type of situations. So we're going to go over them through that. Dr. Lyle, anything that you want to say before we start about just how to look at relationship conflict?
Yeah, I think what we'll do, I mean, the lens from which I view relationships, the fundamental lens is a perspective that if a relationship is wrong for one person, then it's a wrong relationship. And so there's nothing in this thing that is meant to be self-sacrificial. So the concept here that we're after is that relationships are worth being in if they wind up generating happiness, if their overall balance of the person's life is improved. And if it's not, then the relationship, there's no particular reason to, quote, save it or put it on life support or dissect it or anything else. So so this is, you know, relationships do have conflicts, and sometimes those conflicts can make you feel like maybe you don't want to be in it. That isn't necessarily, those feelings aren't necessarily prescriptions. They are certainly important evidence to look at carefully and to try to understand what values are signaling to one that they may be better off somewhere else. And then we try to reason it out from there and run experiments to try to see whether or not we can improve situations. So from that perspective, I'll be interested to hear what these scenarios are, and we'll try to look at it through that lens.
Okay, great. So we're going to go over the first situation. This is from a listener. And by the way, I really want to thank our listeners for listening in and emailing me these scenarios and different situations. If you ever have a situation, if any listeners out there have a situation that they'd like to get some help on, like to get some clarity on, feel free to email us at beatyourgenes@gmail.com. Or you can call in live. We are live on Wednesdays. And actually, we started live today at 7:30 p.m., but next week we are going to be starting live at 8:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So the call-in number there is 657-383-0751. And if you feel like that's not a good time for you, send me an email. We can coordinate. We can talk about this off-air, pre-recorded, and then put it back on air for the benefit of all the listeners. Again, the email address is beatyourgenes@gmail.com, and the number to call in is 657-383-0751. All right, so let's go over situation number one. This is from our listener, and he emails us, and he says, can you guys talk about, in quotation marks, last-minute resistance and what it is from an evolutionary psychology standpoint? To give you an example of what last-minute resistance is, I date a girl We get to bed. So far, everything is good. And then she starts acting like a little brat. The general symptoms are she's not compliant. She may say stuff like, don't touch me there, or don't kiss me there, or I don't do oral sex, etc., etc. I feel like she's playing mind games rather than being into the passion experience that we both want. It's a huge mood killer for me, and I really don't know how to handle it, especially that I've been hearing a lot in social media about this politically correct rape culture. I've read that some females want to be, quote, chaste and overpowered at the initiation of sex, as I thought that it raises their estrogen levels and makes the experience much more enjoyable for them. But I'm not sure, and I'd love to hear your perspective on the issue.
All right. let's see. First of all, let's try to break things down so that we have a system for looking at all problems, and we can learn in this way. First of all, feelings are involuntary reactions. So people have feelings, and feelings are signaling mechanisms to tell the organism about the presence of some value proposition. The value proposition could be a crocodile in a river, at which point you're terrified, or it could be somebody dropping a piece of almond roca in your mouth, at which point it would be a good thing. And so your feelings are if they're neutral, there's nothing going on in the environment that is signaling any particular significant gain or loss. So if we have a young woman about to engage in a sex act, and she is a sex act is by its very nature a high value proposition. It's either a very positive value proposition or it's a very negative value proposition. Sex is expensive to organisms, and it's extremely expensive to human beings. In nature, in the Stone Age, there's a 1 in 20 chance that an act of unprotected sex with a fertile female will result in a pregnancy. Pregnancy is obviously an extremely expensive proposition for a female, so she actually is trying very hard to use all of her instincts to try to only have sex in circumstances that would appear to approximate an ideal choice relative to her opportunities in that local time in her life. So if you think about it, if you think about the total cost of a pregnancy to a female, the cost is phenomenal. It's on the order of, well, let's call it 3 years of life, sheer total child rearing. In other words, when you're raising a kid between, that's going easy, okay? It's at least 3 years. So if you have 3 years or 36 months divided by 20, which is a 5% chance, the minimum way to evaluate this risk is it's essentially a couple of months of life. So as a result, that female should be ambivalent as hell about this situation. Now, if you've just gotten to know this girl, so the reader apparently or our person here or listener has – obviously this is not an established relationship. It's not a relationship where there's a great deal of knowledge and complete acceptance. People are still being vetted. And what he's describing here is a standard operating procedure where the male is – certainly much more interested in pursuing this thing and has much less cognitive dissonance about it than the female. Female is going to have independent neural circuits inside of her head. So some of those neural circuits can be all excited and feeling like this is a really screaming deal and that this is something that she should do, i.e. telling her to allow herself to be screwed. However, she has other independent neural circuits that are walking around this problem and scanning it. And they're saying, well, wait a second, are we sure we know what we're doing? This is very expensive. There's a significant statistical likelihood of pregnancy. Be careful. What do we know about this guy? Is he going to stick around when we're done? You know, what's going to happen? Is he going to be slugging it out with me for the next 5 years in the jungle and protecting me and the infant? How well do I know him? Et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so we would expect that the female would be vastly more ambivalent about this situation at the same point in time early in a relationship as the male. Now, these things can change. So there are people who are going to have relationships where the woman's much more into it than the male. But that's not likely to be the case early. It's much more likely to be the case later, as the female may be putting up with signals that the male's not that interested, or for God forbid, the female actually may have higher libido than the male. Usually that isn't the case. Usually the case is that the females can be trying to hold on to relationships by essentially trying to generate sexual activity, all kinds of reasons, and females also like sex. So as a result, there's all kinds of reasons why later in a relationship it could be turned around upside down. But we're talking about early, and we're not talking about normal, I'm not that hot on it, I'm tired, I'm not that excited, I'm not that into it. No, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a clearly defend the eggs reaction that's taking place out of the female. Now, the listener is saying, well, wait a second, is this some gamey thing where the girl is trying to somehow wants to be dominated? Okay, that's an extremely flattering, self-flattering, and I'm not blaming this guy, that's an extremely flattering male analysis of this female ambivalence. And I think it's very likely to almost always be incorrect. Now, there will be a situation where females early in a relationship, very early, when there's sexual play going on early, they may want to wrestle with the male a little bit. And that is a different issue. They want to wrestle with him because they're trying to check the male's strength relative to their own. And they want to see that the male is substantially stronger than they are. So they're usually giggling and they're having fun, and they may even be a little bit angry because it's a little wrestling match and they may feel like the male gets a little rough on them. You know what I'm saying? But this is all part of a gene checking process that's going on with the female. So she's checking his testosterone levels versus hers, and so she's checking also how rough does he play, et cetera, what's his temperament. There's a lot of checking that's going on. That is not the same thing as what he's talking about. He's talking about some petulance, some legitimate discomfort, some egg guarding behavior, etc. This is not female game playing. This is females having independent neural circuits saying, "Wait a minute, this is pretty quick." Okay, I've got some neural circuits that are saying, "Go ahead." And I've got other neural circuits saying, wait a minute, this is pretty expensive. And so that's actually what he's seeing. And those of us that take it slow with females never see this behavior. Okay? So I have not personally. I'm 57, 56. God, I don't know why I aged myself one extra. And I'm staring at 57. That's going to happen pretty soon. But I have not had that kind of reaction out of a female since I was 16. Okay? So it's been 40 years of a life with various and sundry females, and I have never had the situation that he's referring to. So that tells me it's not females, it's him, and it's because he's doing the standard behavior, which is pushing the male agenda as fast as you can, basically, and he's hitting some resistance, and that's what we're seeing.
Yeah, you know, I was kind of looking into this last-minute resistance that he talked about, and I remembered where I had seen it before. And a few years ago, I think after hearing a little bit about this book called The Game with Neil Strauss, and he wrote this book about pickup artists, and basically we've talked about this on the show before, which is, you know, all these little tips and tricks that he wrote about are, if we look at it from a biological standpoint, it's basically how to bluff a female. And that's where right. that last minute resistance came into play. And there was these hilarious little like tricks and things like that, right. that, you know, who the hell knows if they work or not. But it was very, right. very interesting to see how it's exactly what you were talking about, is that the purpose of those bluffs is to get the female into bed as quick as possible. And right. that is a casual mating strategy as opposed to a long-term yeah. pair bond. So what you're saying is, yeah. is that when the female can sniff that there's more casual yeah. strategy behind it rather than pair bond, little alarm bells go yeah. off and say, wait a second, we got to check it.
That's exactly what's happening. That's correct.
Okay. Okay. Wonderful.
All right.
Well, let's move on to number two. I think this is great. And you know, I actually had a question with his question too. Is it sounds just from the way he's describing the politically correct rape culture. He's probably in college or just out of college. You know, real quickly, I've heard this a little bit on social media. I'm not really in college anymore, but I've heard this a lot. You know, if you go on Facebook or social media, there's all kinds of different posts here and there, and they're most typically from very disagreeable people about how there's this rape culture going on. Can you kind of shed some light as to why that's happening?
I actually don't even know what people are talking about. I don't know what they mean by rape culture. The males and females have always disagreed about males and females are inherently in conflict over sexual activity. And so the males are going to be pushing agendas, and the females are going to be defending against them as they deal with their own ambivalence over the situation that we just described. And the females are also have to, even when males feel incredibly sincere, they could be lying to themselves with their self-deceptive apparatus, and they could be playing casual mating strategy while they believe personally that they're playing pair bond strategy, but they still want to push the agenda. So as a result, you're going to find a conflict of interest with males and females, and disagreeable males are going to wind up using all possible angles, including the disagreeable ones with low conscientiousness will effectively rape females outright, or they will pressure females very hard and be rough and make it very difficult for females to defend themselves. So, you know, that's always a very low percentage of man-woman dynamics. It belongs in this corner. It's because only a certain percentage of males are both very disagreeable and with low conscientiousness. However, you know, it's there, and as a result, over the last 50 years, there's been increased sensitivity to the dilemma that women face behind this issue, and the blame that they have historically taken for these things happening, and the hot under the collar males that will essentially disagreeable entitlement males that will believe that because they were flirted with and led on and played with, but then the female asked for it, which is, of course, ridiculous. And so all of this is part and parcel of the fact that we're animals, and we only are so domesticated, and some of our species are considerably less domesticated than the rest of us. And so there's going to be a few percent of males, not high, but there's a few percent of males that are dangerous in this regard. And they're not going to rape people on the street, but they'll damn well rape people on second dates or first dates when they thought that they got all kinds of positive feedback and everybody had some alcohol and what the hell. And so that's something for everybody to there's no sense in, you know, when I hear these ads on TV about anti-rape ads, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Like, that's a totally worthless public ad. Because the truth is that the males that are responsible are not for the problem are not the males that are going to be paying attention to anybody preaching to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is that's a good point. It's kind of like making laws against crimes. You know, the people on the fence are going to follow the laws, or at least the people on one side are going to. Yeah. Follow the laws, even if the laws aren't there, and the ones who are going to break the law are going to break it no matter what the law is. So,
yeah, this is kind of like peace marches. It's like, wow, you think people giving speeches at peace marches, it's like, who on earth, do you think that anybody that is going to be responsible for dropping a nuke anywhere is listening to that speech? The answer is absolutely not. Okay? And so that, be smart, girls. And don't put yourself in vulnerable positions with disagreeable shitheads.
Very good. Situation number two.
By the way, the research literature clearly shows that there is one characteristic that will absolutely predict who's going to be a rapist, better than anything else. And that's narcissism, okay, which is effectively high disagreeability. This is what that is. And if you add a little emotional instability to this, so if a guy's a little volatile, there's disagreeable guys out there, but they're steady enough, and they may be high conscientious. That's just a real tough lawyer, and they're not going to rape anybody. But when you lower the conscientiousness to people that are, quote, really a real bad boy, not just a bad boy kind of a prosecutor at the DA's office, he's a tough guy. No, that guy, if he's an upstanding lawyer, he's a tough guy, but he's, you know, he will defend you, and he'll do the right thing. I'm talking about a real bad boy, okay, that has a little sociopathic streak in there, and and if you're attracted to that and that volatility and that dominance, you are asking yourself to get into trouble, and that's that narcissism that you must pay attention to, because those are the dangerous ones.
Okay, and if anybody wants to hear more about these different personality characteristics that Dr. Lyle just mentioned, we have a couple of podcasts back. It's called Understanding Your Personality, and we go over in better detail what does disagreeable mean and what is conscientiousness and all the those different bell curves. Okay, so let's go over the second situation. So this is from a woman. She said, my lease is ending soon, and if I've asked my best friend, Joe, who's 30-year-old male, to move in with me. We've been close for about 4 years, and I think we should get along very well as roommates. Before asking Joe to move in, I had a discussion about it with my boyfriend of 1.5 years. Now, I think my boyfriend is awesome, and I don't want to do anything to jeopardize the relationship we're building. And in the interest of full disclosure, I confessed that Joe and I, the guy I'm moving in with, kissed a few years ago, but that was it. I have no romantic interest in Joe, and ultimately, my boyfriend was supportive and said he was okay with Joe moving in. But since then, my family, led by my father, has intervened and said that this is a terrible idea, and if Joe moves in, I should consider my relationship with my boyfriend over. My dad says that my boyfriend won't object because he's a good guy, but no man would honestly be okay with this, no matter how much he trusts his girlfriend. He says, I'm putting myself in a position where things can go wrong. Now, my family doesn't usually comment on my relationships, so this is why I'm taking their advice very seriously. I told Alex what they said, but he brushed it off and said he really doesn't mind. I intend to talk things out with my boyfriend again later this week and probably show him this information. Is my dad right? Or is my boyfriend just playing cool by not objecting? And should I tell my friend that he can't move in? And is it possible that my boyfriend is actually okay with Joe moving in?
All right. This is the correct way to view this is to not be Dr. Laura and feel like you know everything and that we are going to preach from the Bible. The way to look at this is statistical. So if we're going to try to figure out what the right decisions are in life, what you want to do is you want to be on the right side of statistics. You want to play smart. So that's why you don't gamble your life savings on one stock, no matter how promising some analyst thinks it is. The right thing to do is to try to play intelligently and have the optimal risk-reward relationships guide your decision-making. Now, in this case, I can understand the young woman's confusion. She sounds like her lease is up. Therefore, I don't know what that means, that she needs to find a roommate to afford the place that she's living in. Now, statistically, let's talk about what's happening. If she and this guy kissed 4 years ago, then their mate value is relatively equivalent, or that kiss never would have taken place. So if she's an 8 and he's a 4, she never would have kissed him, okay? So the point is that they are reasonably equivalent in terms of mate value, or that wouldn't be that situation. Now, I would agree that she honestly introspects and can tell that she has no interest in this guy. And because her boyfriend is picking up those cues from her, he is very confident. He's being honest, too. He's like, I don't see a problem. Okay, so everybody's playing honest. in all probability. The problem is that our friend Joe over there, if he kissed this girl 4 years ago and they're friends, he is unlikely to have zero sexual interest in her unless she goes on to tell us that he's gay and the kiss was experimental to try to turn him, okay? But if it's not, okay, if that's not the circumstances, then it's I don't recall kissing a girl in my lifetime that I didn't want to sleep with, okay? And so as a result, she appears to qualify for him in terms of a sex partner. This is now a bad idea because Joe, our the friend here, is going to be going to sleep at night with a perfectly good set of eggs that he's already really friendly with, you know, 12, 15 feet away. And that's going to, like, percolate. That's going to be like Chinese water torture dripping on his forehead, trying to get him to do something about it. Now, what he's going to do about it, he's going to, 90% of his psychology is going to be honest and just be a decent guy, and 10% of it, he's going to be running a little ad campaign against the boyfriend and a little ad campaign for himself, okay? And so the dad, of course, has seen enough of life to know that this is exactly the kind of situation where all hell breaks loose. And statistically, I would say the odds are that they get away with it, but that isn't the point now, is it? The point is, what's the best decision? Not is this a decision that we can get away with. If we have a basketball game where the game is on the line and we've got a 95% free throw shooter and we've got a 60% free throw shooter and we can choose which one we're going to have shoot our free throws, the right one to pick is the 95% free throw shooter. So we go with the odds. This is a bad odds situation. You can better believe that this young woman's relationship with her boyfriend is going to have its ups and downs. And you can better believe when it has its downs that right there she's going to be using other minds, including her friend Joe right there, who's going to be real handy, as a guidance system to try to analyze who is being fair, who is being unfair, and what decisions should she make about it. When she does that, Joe is going to have a conflict of interest in this. He's like a judge trying to judge a company where he holds a bunch of the stock, okay? So he's not going to recuse himself from this. His Stone Age brain is going to say, oh, I'll be all sympathetic and all, you know, son of a gun. It just so happens that he sees things her way in this conflict, and it sees that it helps drive a wedge between her and her boyfriend, and lo and behold, a year from now, she and the boyfriend are broken up, and then lo and behold, on the rebound, there's Joe. So the problem is that this is not a benign relationship with respect to her other relationship, and she shouldn't do it. Now, if it turns out that they've got some kind of rush, urgency behind their financial situation, and she needs to have help and have somebody move in right away, and he needs a place to live, then my attitude is no problem having him move in for a month or two, okay, while he finds another place, they get settled down, she interviews roommates and gets some female in there. So that is the appropriate way to do that decision. It is not a time bomb that's with a short fuse. So I'm not worried about a couple of months, but I am definitely worried about a longer-term situation there, and it's not smart. You'll get away with it a whole bunch of times, and a lot of people do, but it's a losing strategy, and I wouldn't do it.
Wonderful. That sounds like something my dad would say. You know, I've seen something similar with my sisters. But okay, situation number three. Okay, situation number three. This is from a man. My wife and I met in our early 20s. Now, we used to be so happy and attracted to each other. We would be active, go for walks, play tennis, etc. She's always had a couple extra pounds, probably putting her in the middle of overweight on the BMI chart. Now, I've always found her very attractive, and she never looked big to me. I have an athletic body type, and I put in a lot of effort to keep it that way. But she's also struggled with depression and anxiety her whole life. But since our child, who's 5, was born, she's been a totally different person. Her depression's out of control. She'll rarely leave the house unless it's with me or another person. She's seeing doctors, taking medications for this, but it still continues. Now, the problem is she's gained at least 100 pounds, mainly from not eating all day, then loading up on whatever convenient junk food or takeout food is around. She also won't get off the couch even if the house is burning down and the fire hasn't quite made it there yet. Our kid goes to daycare 3 times a week, and as soon as I come home from work, I'm the one playing with the kid, picking him up, taking out dinner, picking up takeout dinner, and taking care of the dog and trying to clean up the mess of a house she leaves. Now she's starting to get these constant aches and pains in her joints due to all of her extra weight, which causes her to be even more lazy and couch ridden. To top this all off, at around, say, 10 o'clock at night, she'll ask me to grab her a soda or whatever the next time I get up, and gets pissed at me when I fall asleep on the couch and I don't get what she asked for. I'm thinking, get up and get it yourself. Yeah, I've said this to her, and it usually just makes her even more mad. There are also some major other issues that have popped up over the years. For example, she hasn't been able to hold down a job, which puts incredible strain on our finances. I just don't know what I should do. There are times when I just want to break it off, but I think of our child, and my heart just breaks, and that's where those thoughts end. Don't get me wrong, it's not all misery, and we do have some really great days where she seems fine and all is well, but it seems like the next bad week or month is just looming around the corner. What do I do?
Well, that sounds like it doesn't sound like a true story, and it sounds like a lot of this is contrived, but in the there's a caricature of the relationship here. The any guy that's in a situation where the woman is just dysfunctional shouldn't be thinking a little bit about leaving. It should be on his head 24/7. And and what we really have is what's being described here is an extremely dysfunctional woman. And if this is in fact a real live listener with a real live problem, then I'm going to suggest that the relationship is not the issue here. The issue is that this woman is in pretty bad shape psychologically, and so you cannot really have much of a relationship with someone who is in incredible trouble. So. What's being described here, a lot of people would say, oh, this is postpartum depression and so forth, but really this is all nonsense. The truth of the matter is that this is a person in real trouble. And this didn't happen in a vacuum. So I am not sure what all the circumstances are. Anybody that's now 100 pounds overweight and is 30 years old and can't hold down a job, and is on a bunch of psychiatric medications, which, by the way, are big trouble. And so if anyone is interested, they should read a book called Anatomy of an Epidemic by Robert Whittaker. And if my wife was in this kind of mess, that would be the first book that I would read so that I would come to understand how problematic the psychiatric medications are, and they could drive and basically keep a person in a tar pit. It's very hard for them to get out of. So human beings by nature are not this miserable. And so if they are this miserable, there's a reason. And so this person, this gal needs some decent cognitive behavioral therapy. She needs to be off of her psychiatric medications, but that has to take place slowly and very slowly and very, very intelligently with guidance. And she needs to put her life back together. And this person, our guy here, needs to understand that this is what needs to happen. And so hopefully they have health insurance if he has a job. And so she will be able to get cognitive behavioral therapy, which is going to be the best therapeutic style that's going to be the most helpful for her in all probability. And we need to see if this woman can dig her way out of what is in fact a very deep hole, okay? And she should be able to. We should definitely, the next year, it should be quite possible for this woman to turn her life around. Now, when that happens, we will, we'll see what kind of relationship this looks like at the end of it. But for right now, I wouldn't be evaluating the relationship per se. I would be considering this to be a 5-star emergency for this individual person. And if no moves can be made, she won't take any initiative to follow a path that is paved in front of her for help. If she winds up being just, like I said, a caricature of negativity and no motivation, then of course a person has to consider leaving that relationship. And don't worry too much about the impact on children. Your job as a parent, if you break up a relationship, is to be very kind and supportive and as stable as possible to everybody involved. And children adapt quite well to that scenario if that's the way that we have to go.
Okay. Well, very interesting. Yeah. You know, I was looking at this lens, of course, not a professional, thinking like, all right, this guy's just in a bad situation, you know, let's get it out. But this is a really interesting perspective that she's the one that's actually dealing with this really sad emergency.
Yes, she's living a life that's at 5th percentile relative to her potential. We don't know why, and she clearly needs some expert guidance to take her by the hand and lead her out of a maze. And that's what needs to be done.
Okay. All right. So our next story here, our next situation, and this is from a woman who's dating her boyfriend. So my boyfriend Steve and I have been together for over a year now, and things are great between the two of us. But after moving back home and closer to Steve, I realized that many of my friends from home have grown apart or moved away. So I didn't really have any close friends. So I started joining meetup groups and connecting with new people, and am slowly rebuilding my social circle. And whenever my friends and I go out, I always invite my boyfriend. However, he seems reluctant to join us or annoyed by these new friends. Now, they're all really nice people, so there's no reason to be annoyed with them. It's really upsetting because I constantly try to include him, and he couldn't care less about hanging out with all of us. Now, Steve, my boyfriend, is a part of a club for sports leagues, and he frequently goes out with friends of this group, both male and female. But I'm never invited. I get that my boyfriend and girlfriend should have lives outside of each other, but I feel like it's a slap in the face that I continue to invite him out, and I have yet to meet his friends from this social group. Should I bring it to his attention that I would like to be invited at least once so I can meet these people, or should I just drop it and stop inviting him out?
Yeah, well, we begin with the first sentence that says something like, things are great between my boyfriend and I, and I can say that is clearly not the case. They're not even close to great. So this is the first thing that we check before we leap to the inference that he is essentially stringing her along, not that interested in her, and this is a short to intermediate mating strategy for him, but he fundamentally doesn't care that much about the human because that's how he's behaving. Before we leap to that conclusion, there is one thing that we should check, and that is we should definitely integrate ourselves with his sports people. And we want to be very integrated with those sports people. So we want to make sure that everybody there knows her, and that they know that they're a couple, and that there are public displays of affection between the two of them while they're at their sports things, etc. Now, if she's never been invited, generally sports are a place where males are very interested in displaying to females whom they're attracted to. So the dynamics of the world are some guy that plays softball with his buddies would love to have his girlfriend come watch. It's the girlfriend thinking, I don't want to go watch your stupid softball game. I'm not interested. Okay, so this is not what I'm hearing. I'm hearing that he is essentially hiding her as a mate, and he doesn't seem to really care about that she goes and does things on her own, which means that he is not interested in guarding her as a mate. So he is essentially shielding his social group from the fact that he has a mate, and he is not caring if she is in fact meeting up with a new social group where he can't keep track of her. So this looks to me like a guy who's not that invested, and my alarm bells are way going off in terms of her power in this relationship. So the advice is that quit worrying about your own little social group and his reaction to that. Maybe he's just introverted and disagreeable, and therefore he can only hang with the people that he already knows. So we will give him a break and say that that's all that is. And then we're going to, however, insist that you get very integrated with his sports people. And we're going to do that for several months. And if he gives you pushback about this, then you are learning something tremendous about his interest in this relationship. In other words, if he pushes back on you becoming integrated with these sports people, this is an indictment of his interest in you, and you should get out.
Now, and this, I'm curious if your advice would be similar. I mean, if they had been together for a shorter period of time, for instance, like they've been together for over a year, whereas at
yes.
what point do you recommend that starts to happen, the integration of the social circle? Is it 3 months, 6 months? You know.
Yeah, I would say this, that it's fair for a guy to be careful with everybody's feelings about this, and to have a relationship be relatively private for a few weeks. Now, most guys are not really that way. So most guys are very interested. If they're proud of the girl and they think they're in love with her, they're fine showing the world that this is their girl. They want to be seen with this girl. However, there are a few people, myself included, that actually are want to have the dynamics of a relationship out from the scrutiny and the feedback of family and friends. In other words, I don't want to hear anybody's opinion about anything. I want to quietly get to know somebody, and I don't want to have anybody pushing at my psychology about this. So I will move slowly on that, and so it might be 2 or 3 months before I would introduce a woman to my social circle at all, and then I'm going to be selective about that, et cetera. So, however, I've gotten feedback over the years that sometimes people felt that I was not that into them, and that is why I was doing that, and they were slightly insulted. And I have to tell you that there was truth in that. It was absolutely true that I was not so sure how interested I was. And I was taking my sweet time. And so and maybe I was pretty interested, but I didn't want to go through the rigmarole of building up a social expectation that I was going to then have to unwind. So there are reasons for a guy to take it somewhat slow, but a year is ridiculous. Okay, a year is completely ridiculous. And if a guy is, and particularly if a guy has a significant social group and he does not invite the female to it, this is the hallmark of a male who is hiding that female so that he can pursue other possible relationships in a separate social domain. And that sounds like what is happening here. And so we will make the test by her pushing the envelope, pushing her way into that social group, and we'll find out how he reacts to that. For all we know, there is the mysterious couple's problem of poor communication that we talked about last time as being so ludicrous. And so there's a possible ability that he would be delighted that he has been too quiet and humble to assume that she would want to join his social group. And so perhaps if she expresses that interest and enthusiasm for this, maybe he will be delighted to show off his athletic prowess and show her off to his friends. I doubt it like hell, but he is not guilty until he's guilty. So we will pursue this and find out what happens.
Wonderful. Okay, so our last situation, this one's a little bit long. So if we want to analyze this and it takes a little bit longer, we can continue next show and continue off. So you just let me know if we want to spend some more time on this. Okay, the story is this is a male. And here we go. My wife and I are from a South Asian background. I met her through my mom, actually, because my mom called in her parenting chips and told me that she would not die peacefully unless I married someone from our background. Now, before meeting this woman, I made sure to keep myself attractive. I followed my dreams, have a high-paying career, kept working out in college till I got my physique as close to a celebrity as possible, and have different hobbies. And so before meeting my wife, I had a few relationships with women from all kinds of different cultural backgrounds, and I had a really healthy and interesting sex life. But this all came to an abrupt stop when my mom was diagnosed with breast cancer. It's a bit of a wake-up call for her, and as her traditional responsibility, she wanted me to find a wife before she passed away. So I told her about the girlfriend I had at the time, but my mom was adamant that she wanted me to only marry someone from our cultural background. So that's how she introduced me to my current wife. So I met my current wife 1.5 years ago, and I didn't go into it resenting her or my mom for that matter, because I understood where my mom was coming from. She and my dad had done everything in their power to provide the best life for me in the Western world. So the least I could do was maintain our tradition for one more generation. So I kept an open mind, and I soon came to realize that I really clicked with my wife. So we went on about 15 dates over the course of 6 months. We kissed multiple times, but I never wanted to attempt to have sex in case word got back to her parents or mine. She would always say that I had a great body amongst all the South Asian guys she'd seen, so at least I knew she was sexually attracted to me. Then both of our parents did a status update, found out we both liked each other, and told us to proceed with marriage arrangements. I wouldn't have thought I could be so lucky to meet a girl from my background like my wife, because I literally had never seen a girl from this type of cultural background as pretty, nice, and considerate as she was. So after we got married, we moved in together and began our lives. I did my best to be the best husband that I could. Didn't ask her for much, helped with chores, take care of the food, her taking care of the food, me taking care of cleaning. I kept up with my Casanova days and made sure to bring her flowers every few days, desserts, surprise dates, and jewelry. But our sex life was another issue. I think this is where I made the mistake and should at least try to initiate sex when we were dating so I could set my expectations. She asked me on our wedding night how many women I'd been with. And I told her I'd slept with about 8 women with relationships, and I had about 10 one-night stands. When I asked her the same question, she laughed it off and said, "I'm not as slutty as you are." So in my mind, I thought she probably only had sex with 1 or 2 guys a handful of times. So in our marriage, we'd have sex a few times a week, but it was often me putting in most of the effort, and she only wanted to try 2 of the most common positions. I asked her to try some new things like oral sex or anal sex or other things, but she said all that stuff was dirty and that she wasn't as slutty as I was. So instead of being bothered, I kept up myself, focused, and just kept treating my wife like the queen that I thought she is. However, over the last year, she's put on about 20 pounds. I don't bring it up, but it just feels like one sign, just another sign that she isn't putting as equal an effort as I am to be attractive to each other. She isn't putting in the same effort as I am, as in my past relationships, where girlfriends would at least bake me something or something to show me their appreciation of me. But the big problem is I recently discovered a secret she had. I was fixing her computer as a surprise, and I stumbled upon a bunch of different videos. I opened the first one, and it looked like she was holding the camera and a man standing behind her. The name of the video was called Bar Pickup Number 3. So she set the camera down and proceeded to have foreplay and then sex. Everything I saw in the video was what she didn't do with me, but she was doing with this man, the whole 9 yards. It hurt me inside. I went through all the videos, and total, I counted about 27 different men with 50 different videos. The problem is my wife had called me a slut for sleeping with half as many women, most in longer-term relationships, and here she was taking videos of herself having sex with bar pickup number 3. So I confronted her, and she had a big breakdown. At first, she accused me of snooping and digging around in her private life, but I was simply trying to surprise her with a fixed computer. And I told her that I understood why she wasn't willing to try something new, because she was probably burnt out from all the bar pickups she had in the past. So she started crying and admitted to it all, saying that she was just exploring her sexuality. I was frustrated, so I slept on the couch, and the following week I didn't try to initiate sex at all. I felt cheated and betrayed. And my wife told me a few times that she's going to try and remember how to give oral sex and do anal sex and all that stuff. But I just told her I need some time to think about it. On top of this, she started bringing up how we need to start thinking about children. What should I do? I want to work on our relationship, but I feel betrayed. I don't really feel attracted to her anymore. Some of it's because of the weight gain, but now it's more so that she lied to me about her sex life and how far I saw she was willing to go with complete strangers versus me, her husband. What should I do? I feel like I put in so much effort and I get so little out of it.
Well, sounds like a very exciting, bizarre story. And let's break this down in from a few perspectives. The first perspective is that this is a very funny looking relationship, and it doesn't line up with the human potential of what I call romantic love. It's not even close, and it's no surprise really, since these people met under these haywire, constrained cultural expectation circumstances. And this reminds me of a lot of your very a lot of cultures are very backwards with respect to human freedom, and they're very backwards financially, for example. And so the backwards the horrendous financial circumstances that much of the world has faced wind up reflecting the high expense, biological expense of sexuality that I referred to earlier. And they have made for essentially people saying, look, life is really rough, and so what we're going to do is we're gonna try to organize it for you because you're too young and stupid to know what you're doing. And so we're going to try to make sure that everybody's got enough money, and that will grease the wheels of life as best as possible, as we're going to, as a family, dictate how you're going to reproduce your genes. So the first mistake is that this guy listened to his mother. So if you listen to your mother and take advice from your mother on anything about marriage, you're asking for trouble. So he got trouble. Yeah, so he got all kinds of trouble. So apparently he goes and marries this girl after – you know, a few months courtship, but we get married for God's sake instead of spending, sounds like he's probably in his 20s or so. So instead of spending 2 or 3 years with a gal and having a romantic relationship with her and having sex with her for a couple, 3 years and deciding, and then at that point, folks, you don't get married. You find out if you are. Marriage, if it's worth anything, is psychological. It's got nothing to do with the government. It's got nothing to do with the law. It has to do with who you are as people and what you think of each other and whether or not you have decided after vetting this person for 1,000 days, whether or not you are on their team and by God you want to be there and you don't want to be anywhere else. That's what a marriage is. Now, other people don't do it that way. They have their mother tell them what they ought to do, and then they wind up in a mess like this. So clearly what we have is we have a young woman who, for whatever reasons, it's amazing to me that any woman that had 27 sex partners on videotape is a woman that married who her parents thought she should marry in a traditional relationship. This is like one of the most haywire things I've ever heard, and it doesn't add up, but we're going to just suppose that it does add up. So clearly we have an individual with some pretty weird circuits inside that head. And so that is not a very evolved, self-aware human. And therefore what we have we've got a haywire relationship. So my way of thinking is now, you know, thank goodness that there's no children yet. So therefore we can back up and, you know how there's an old saying, that there's never time to do it right, but there's always time to do it over. You know, that's if you hurry and nail a 2x4 up in your house in the wrong place, it's going to screw it up, and you're going to have to pull it out and, you know, measure it right and do it right the second time. So as far as I'm concerned, this guy right now doesn't have much of a relationship. He really doesn't know who the hell this person is very well. And what they ought to consider is that they're dating, that they're not married. And we'll see whether or not they become married as they now actually find out about each other and that they bring the communication here to reality. So this is if this is truth, and if this is a true story, it's unlikely that this girl has the chops to do this. Our guy sounds a little bit naive and young, and maybe a little bit overly agreeable, and almost a stereotype for this sort of culture. And so he's taken his mom's direction, and he's taken it to heart, and he's worked hard to get a high-paying job, et cetera. So he's obviously got some intelligence. So I'm going to speak to that intelligence right now, that you've not found the love of your life. Okay, that's not what this is. And it would be a cruel thing to do to both of you to pretend that this is true just because parents watched you go through a wedding ceremony. Okay? Probably the right thing to do is to get divorced and then find out whether you feel like dating each other, because you just can't keep away from each other. Okay? People that are married, you can put wars in between them. You can have bombs going off. You can have tragedies in the middle, and great, great problems and great losses, and it will not keep them from each other, because they know they're married, okay? That they are the best of friends, and that they're attracted to each other, and they don't want to be with anybody else, okay? So this is not what this is. This is not even close to what this is. So now I'll get real as opposed to cheeky, and I'll tell you what you do. I'd quit having sex with her. I wouldn't have sex with her again. Nobody's going to die of a lack of sexual activity. So just take the next 4 to 6 months and get to know each other as people. Talk about everything. And what's on the table here is to say, look, where we are right now, we don't have a romantic love relationship. But let's get to know each other really well and let's find out. Let's fight for it if it's worth fighting for. And if it's not worth fighting for, if people aren't really motivated to really step up and communicate about who they are and what they really want in life and give it their very best to try to earn it, then we're done. And we should get divorced, call this a bad date, bad idea, bad decision, and move on, because there is promise out there for an appropriate relationship for both people. And most importantly, for this individual who's very sincere and trying to do it right.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, subscribe, write us a review, or share this podcast with a friend. To send in a question or read more about the show, you can visit our website at www.beatyourgenes.org. Until next time, this is Nate G. and Dr. Lyle with Beat Your Genes, an evolutionary psychology podcast for finding happiness in the modern world.